Who is going to ring your doorbell this year? Who's on the other side of the door for you? And for those of you that are familiar with the movie, it is a comedy classic of Chevy Chase and gang. If you're familiar with the movie, and by the way, the clip was my fault because I tried to grab the actual clip and I totally botched it, so I had to scramble to get it off the web. And so that was my fault, not Jack back there. You can only work with what you're given, right, Jack? So... But if the clip would continue on, once that door opens, the floodgates open, and in come a massive family, all different personalities, whole cast of characters, and the Griswolds have to deal with their family for the wonderful Christmas season. So again, I ask you, who's going to ring your doorbell? Because as we look at stressors on the family during the Christmas season, one of the biggest stressors is the people that you're going to interact with. Some of those people you're really looking forward to interacting with, others not so much. And as we move into this season, we have to consider what is it going to look like when we interact with the people that sometimes we're forced to interact with. When you see that clip, or when I even talk about people coming to your door, some of you sit there in your seat and you start to kind of cringe. You're like, oh yeah, it's going to happen in 2 weeks. It's going to happen in 11 days, 10 days, 9 days. The doorbell is going to ring and there's going to be somebody there because you know someone's coming to your house to visit. Some of you are going to another house and you really are not looking forward to walking through that door because you know what sits on the other side. And you're tense about it. You're anxious about it. You're nervous about it. When Bridget and I got married, there's tons of stories I can share, and I want to be fair to both sides because every family has issues. Every family has baggage. Every family has characters. Every family, without exception. And if you're sitting here thinking that your side of the family has it all together, but her side of the family doesn't, or your side of the family has it all together, his side of the family has all the issues, you're probably kidding yourself because there's something in every family. So when Bridget and I were married about 8 years, we go on a big family vacation with her family, and we go to a beach house, and the quick version of the story, and I kid you not, I come back from the beach, and Bridget has two brothers, and as I walk into the little backyard area through the gate, I find one brother strangling the other brother. He has him up against the wall with both hands, strangling him, and the other brother is swinging at him. So from that, Bridget and I, we kind of set this bar for good family vacations, and we said if it was a family vacation that did not have a strangulation, it was a pretty good family vacation. And I'm not even joking. They got into an argument because one brother had cursed in front of the other brother. Other brother didn't like it. They've always been like this. So they just went at one another. On my side of the family, and some of you feel like this too. There's people that you really like to hang out with, or maybe you used to hang out with them and you were very similar to them, but things have kind of changed. You have that person in the family that really hasn't grown up and they're still the same person they were when they are 18 years old. Or you have someone that you enjoy being around and you think they're really funny and you think their jokes are really funny, but you find out, you're shocked that your wife, your husband, doesn't think those jokes are nearly as funny. But you're going to be around that person during this holiday season. On my side of the family, I have a brother that I was really close with growing up. We're not as close as we used to be. And I still love my brother. He has some challenges as a parent. And he has one child out of wedlock that he lives with the mom. And when we see them for Christmas, because they have challenges as a parent, this little girl, she's difficult. She's really tough. And whenever he comes over, I'm excited. I want to see my brother. But the little girl that comes along, she's not the best influence on my kids. So I have to unpack. I have to unravel. What's that going to look like? How am I going to handle the fact that I want my brother to be there? I love seeing my brother at Christmas. But the extended family that comes along with that, there are some challenges in there. And we all feel like this. We have the drunk brother. We have the divorced family. Some of you come from backgrounds where you have divorced parents. So you're not just seeing two sets of parents. You're seeing three. You're seeing four. You're seeing maybe even five sets of parents during the holiday season. You try to cram it all in because Christmas Eve, you'll go someplace for breakfast and someplace for lunch and someplace for dinner. Christmas morning, hurry up, kids, unpack your gifts because we have to go over to grandma's house. The schedule is full. You have to run around and make all of these stops. Some of you have elderly folks that you interact with during the holidays. And that's just a different dynamic. I'm not going to go off on the soapbox about how we should respect or interact with our elders and what that looks like. But it is a different dynamic when you have little people that are crawling around and you have poopy diapers and you're going over a grandparent's house and you have to sit down and like you're waiting for them to finish the sentence. Because it just takes a while. It's just a little bit of a slower pace and you're not used to that. And you're just go, go, go. And they're on a different page. So you have to deal with that. Some of you aren't going to sleep in your beds this holiday. You gave up your bed and your in-laws or your extended family are there. And so you're sleeping on the floor. You're not sleeping well. You're just sucking down coffee like you might as well get an IV because you're so exhausted. It's a stressful time. Some of you are around planners, and some of you around spontaneous people. Some of your families, Bridget's family, that you don't even know they're coming. And I'm not joking. They'll call you up and say, we have plane tickets. They've called us up and said, we have plane tickets. And we're like, we're not even home next week. And they're like, okay, I guess we'll go to your brother's house because they're coming. And we're, that's just the way. And my family, I mean, you have to plan. We're planning right now for 2018. So some of you have planners and some of you don't. And some of your families are always, always late. They're late for everything. You say your Christmas Eve dinner is going to start. We're serving dinner at 7:30, and they show up at 8:30. And some of your family, they're disgustingly early, like crazy early, and it drives you nuts. And you're dealing with all these factors. So the question is, how are we going to manage that tension, the tension of relationships during the Christmas season? So right now, before we begin, we're going to do a little exercise with your spouse. You're going to turn to your spouse and you're going to whisper, and I mean whisper, you're going to whisper and you're going to take turns and you're going to whisper who you're nervous about spending this holiday with. You're going to whisper that to your spouse and then your spouse is going to reciprocate and whisper to you. Maybe you're on the same page, maybe you're different, but you're just going to whisper because we're going to get it out there right now so that as we talk, we can consider how we're going to deal with this. And at the end, we'll talk about some very specific applications of how to work with difficult family relations. So right now, take 30 seconds, you whisper a name, he whispers a name, and then we'll come back up. Some of you are still whispering. I said one name. Maybe I should have narrowed that down a little bit. We're not going to the top three. We're not going to the top 10 list. We're just one name. Whoever rises to the top. Okay, so now it's out there. There is no more elephant in the room. You know she's nervous about somebody coming. She knows you're nervous about somebody coming or going somewhere. So now it's out there, and we can continue that conversation because communication, if you aren't getting it or haven't gotten it thus far, communication is at the core of relationship. And the three aspects of Christmas time that we're going to talk about over these 3 weeks, communication is very much at the core. We have to start the dialogue because chances are she already knew that. He already knew that. You're just not talking about it. Now you have to talk about it and we have to take action. So as we move forward, we have to figure out what does this look like out of God's word? And like a lot of cases, like a lot of life circumstances, the Bible doesn't tell us exactly what to do. It gives us some guiding principles. But what I do love about the word of God is oftentimes it gives us a really clear picture of what not to do. And when we unpack what not to do, and put that together with the principles, the wisdom of what to do, we come up with the answer to our question. So today, we're going to look at what not to do. And if you have a Bible with you, I'm going to ask you to turn to Genesis 29, because we are going to look at the poster child of dysfunctional family this morning. We are going to look at the life of Jacob. The life of Jacob. And because it's long and drawn out, we're not going to take a ton of time going through all the little details, but we're going to hit some highlights. We're going to unpack it. We're going to see the tendency of man, the tendency of woman, the tendency of me, the tendency of you, and how to react. And then we're going to move forward from that. So a little bit of background on Jacob with your help, because I love when you guys interact with me. A little bit of background on Jacob. Before Jacob goes and finds his beautiful bride, tell me a little bit about Jacob. Just shout it out. A little bit about Jacob. Maybe who was his father? Isaac, thank you. Okay, any siblings? Esau. So Isaac, Jacob, and Esau. Happy family, not so happy family, not so happy. Dysfunction breeds dysfunction. So you have the dysfunction of Isaac's family. You have this tension between Jacob and Esau. The Lord saying that Jacob, who was the younger, was going to get the blessing, even though Esau was older. You have manipulation. Jacob and his mom manipulate the father to get the blessing. It's just a total mess. It's a train wreck. So the train wreck continues a little bit further down the track. And we read in 29 that Jacob goes out, he leaves his father, and now he's going out and he's in a search to find a bride. And this might bring back some fond memories for you. So let's insert ourselves into the story of Genesis 29. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And then we scroll down a little bit and we see that Jacob ran into some shepherds. The shepherds were going to a well. At that time, it was common that people would block the well, not only to keep it clean, number one, also to keep out people that they didn't want in the well. So they would roll a big flat stone in front of it. And these stones were big. And we know the story about a stone. We recall Jesus and the stone being rolled away. These were big stones. Took multiple men to roll back the stone. Some shepherds are like, yeah, there's a big stone. And Jacob's like, oh yeah, that's a pretty big stone. He's not going to think anything of it. And then we continue on in verse 10. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone. So you have Jacob, who's like, man, that's a big stone. It would really stink to have to roll back that stone. All of a sudden, Rachel appears, and it's like, rolls up his sleeves, shows off the pipes, goes over, pushes this big stone out of the way. Did you see me push that stone out of the way? That type of thing, you know? He's ready. It takes multiple guys to roll the stone, but Jacob wants to show off a little bit for the woman that he's trying to impress. Remember those days? Remember when you saw her for the first time? Remember when you saw him for the first time? You know, we've talked about this. Dating is kind of like my rep meets your rep, and then we say I do in the rep's leave, right? You see the best of the other person, and that's the dating process, the engagement process. You want to put on the best look that you can. You want to be the best person that you can be. So here's Jacob putting on an act because he really likes this girl. She's beautiful, and it's a little bit twisted. Yes, it is his first cousin, so we're not even going to go there. So it's a little bit weird at the same time, but nevertheless, he is in love. So then they go and they meet the father. So verse 15, then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my kinsman, because Jacob was Laban's sister's son, okay? Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? If you're coming here to work, what should I give you? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. And Jacob was in love with Rachel, and he asked for her hand. And Laban said, well, if you serve me 7 years, I will give you the hand of my daughter in marriage. So oftentimes our relationship starts out this way, right? It's like, okay, cool. Jacob came with nothing. He didn't really have, but he's willing willing to work. And Laban is like, okay, you like my daughter? I'll give her to you, the younger daughter. You just have to work for a little while. Everything is cool, right? Like you met her parents for the first time and they seem really, really nice. You met his family for the first time and you like everybody. And like even that little quirky stuff that when you first saw them, you even like that, like the quirky, weird stuff, you know, the stuff that fast forward 20 years drives you crazy. Back then you liked it. You thought it was funny. You thought it was cute. Same thing about him and same thing about her. But now we start to unpack the story a little bit. And what we see down in verse 21 is that Jacob worked for 7 years. And he said, now that the work is complete, can I have my wife? So verse 22, Laban gathered together all the people of the palace, made a feast. But in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob. And he went in to her, went in to be with her, went in for the marital rites. Now it gets ugly. We see that Jacob did what he had agreed to do. And remember, we have to keep in mind that Jacob is the deceiver. He is a manipulator, and he came in, and he was actually trying to do what was right and keep his word, and his future father-in-law twisted it, manipulated it, lied to him. And the story continues, and I might date myself a little bit here, but I mean, this is like straight up Jerry Springer, okay? I mean, this is like Geraldo, okay? If you want to take the time to read through this story, it's weird. It's just downright weird. So Jacob says, why'd you do that? And Laban says, well, because she's not the oldest daughter, and the oldest daughter in our country always goes first. So I gave you my oldest daughter first. Well, then can I have Rachel? Sure, 7 more years. So Jacob works 7 more years. It's just a messed up story. You have Leah, who is the oldest daughter. She bears 4 sons. And then Rachel becomes the wife of Jacob as well after 7 years. And Rachel wants to have children. She cannot, very similar to what happened to Jacob's father, Isaac. Rachel cannot have children. So Rachel says, well, since I can't have children, I want you to take my servant girl, Bilhah. And so Jacob starts sleeping with Bilhah, has 2 sons with them. Then Leah can't bear any more children. So Leah says, well, I want you to have Zilpah, my servant girl. So, like I said, I mean, it's weird. So he just starts sleeping with everybody. So Jacob's sleeping around, having children all over the place, has 2 sons with Zilpah, 2 more sons with Leah, and then finally Rachel has a son, and that's where we hear about Joseph, to be continued. We learn a lot more about Joseph. Again, I'm fast-forwarding through a lot of the story. Now we come to the point where Jacob has been serving his father-in-law for a long time, and he is ready to go. He now has a son. We're not sure why he waited that long. It's been about 20 years, 7 years in service for the first, for the wife that he didn't want, 7 years in service for the wife that he did want, 6 more years approximately of service on top of that because he's just doing the work for his father-in-law. It continues on and on and on, and Jacob wants to leave, and he goes to Laban and says he wants to leave. Laban tries to trick him into staying. There's this whole mess with sheep, and again, I'm not going to get into the details of the story, but basically, Jacob finds out that his father-in-law is not going to let him leave, so he manipulates the situation. And there's sheep that are belong to Jacob, and there are sheep that belong to his father-in-law Laban. And Jacob makes it so that only his sheep will grow and multiply, and his father-in-law's will not, because he's taking care of his assets. So he's conniving, he's manipulating. It's just a big old mess until finally we get to the point where Jacob says, I'm just going to take off. So he secretly goes to his, and I don't know exactly how this works, but he goes to his wives and all of his servants and all of his kids, and he's like, we're taking off tonight. And they all pack up. I don't know how you pull that one off, but they all pack up and they take off. Laban pursues them. It's just a big, big mess. And I would encourage you to go back and read through it, because like I said, it paints a picture. It paints a picture of what Jacob was like, but it also paints a picture of what we are like. And here's the point. The point is, the Bible often gives us a clear picture of what not to do. Our tendency is to hide. Jacob tried to do that. Our tendency is to deceive, to twist, to manipulate, to get revenge. We're not happy about the interaction that we have with our extended family, so we're going to manipulate the situation. We're gonna take revenge. Somebody did something to me that I didn't approve of, so I'm going to do something back. They hurt my wife's feelings, I'm going to get that back. That's our natural reaction in our flesh to get back at, to get even with, to go after our extended family when we're not feeling like they're treating us the way that we should be treated. That's my natural reaction. That's our natural reaction, and we see that in the person of Jacob. So where do we go during this holiday season when some of those interactions are required? We don't have the choice oftentimes whether or not we're going to spend time with people or not. What do we do in those cases? Well, I do think the Bible gives us not only an example of what not to do, but it gives us some wisdom as to how to handle that type of situation. And I'm going to give you three, and these are your applications for today. Caveat before the first. Some of you, your primary interaction that is challenging is with your in-laws. And we're not even going to call them in-laws. We're going to call them the outlaws. So some of you, your primary interaction that's challenging is with your outlaws. And for you, they fall under the broad umbrella that I'm about to talk about. But I also want to give you the little teaser that in January, we're going to talk about planning. In February, we're going to launch into a whole series called Big Kids. And Big Kids is about the journey that you go through as a married couple and working with your parents, because you're always kind of a kid to them. So we're going to spend a whole month talking about interaction with in-laws in February. So just hold off if that's your primary issue and you want to have discussions around that. Here are the three. First, protect your core family. God has given you your core family. And when I say family, and I've told if you haven't heard me say this, I say it all the time, your family is just the person you're sitting next to. Family is when a man and woman come together, two become one. That's family. Some of your families have expanded beyond that with children. Some have not. But you're a family. You need to protect your core family. You need to consider first how interactions, how parties, how events impact your core family. That's number one. Number two, really tangible. Pre-activity, post-activity. Talk about it. Talk about it. So if you know Christmas Eve you're going somewhere and you dread it, and maybe your husband doesn't dread it, you need to talk about that. So pre-activity, you say, and this is an area where it's challenging. I know you like hanging out with your brother, but it's really hard on the kids. It's really hard on me. Talk about it. Get down to the specific details. Like, I don't like being in the room by myself with your sister. Like, every time I'm in the room, I feel really uncomfortable. So if you talk about that and you say, okay, I never knew that. So when we go over for the party, I'm not going to let you in the room by yourself with her, because you communicate through it. Pre-activity, post-activity, how did it go? Was that better than it was last year? Did I do a good job? How could we move forward? Because they're not going to go away. The family's not going to go away. You're going to have them. So learn from what just happened and talk about how to move forward with that. Pre-activity, post-activity communication. And finally, I would encourage you to build in some buffers for your family. So at the holidays, we think December, and then we narrow it down even more and we say Christmas break, and there's 10 days, 14 days, whatever you have, we got to cram it. We're going to cram it full of everything. We're going to see everybody. We're going to do everything. And some of you, that Christmas Eve is a reality. You literally jump in the car. We're leaving at noon because we have to be here at 12:30. You jump in the car and you drive there. And then you drive to the next spot. And for the health of your relationship, for the health of your family, build in buffers to the holidays. So literally say, okay, we're going to spend the morning with my family and the evening with your family. But in the afternoon, let's just be us, because we need to step back. For our families, it's kind of like whiplash when we go one place or another, because you have the anal retentive German planners always on time over here. And what's that? Very adult oriented. And then like the fun, Irish, spontaneous, let's just pick up and go somewhere, no plans, all that over there. And literally, if we go from one to the other, we get whiplash. Like, my neck is sore because I can't handle going from one environment to the other that quickly. And my kids are exactly the same. So build in buffers in the holidays. Maybe you say, this day we're going to be with this family, this day we're going to be with that family, but we're not going to try to do it in one day. And these are painful lessons that Bridget and I have learned over time, because it's challenging when you have opposite ends like that. So protect the core family, pre-activity, post-activity communication, and build in buffers. And as I Every couple can experience the joy this season by maneuvering the minefield. Sometimes you have to go through the minefields, but that doesn't mean you have to go through blindly and without looking at the plan and coming up with a plan for addressing it. Go in with your eyes open. Don't just start running to see how quickly I can get through the party. If we get there, maybe he'll want to leave early and we can get out the door. Plan through it. Talk about it. And use those to come up with a way of maneuvering the minefields that are out there. If we took the time to consider the ramifications of interacting with our family and we actually talk through it, it will get better over time. But if you just ignore it and you don't talk about it, you choose the trajectory for it to get worse. Because whatever's building up inside of you, whatever's building up inside of her, that only continues to build negatively over time. You need to start communicating and working together and protect your family to come up with a way for addressing the extended family. And that's the only way things are going to get better. Imagine if we took the time this year and we actually talked about what this interaction is going to look like. And then next time we got together, it got a little bit better and a little bit better. Is it ever going to be perfect? Are you ever going to be super excited to see the person you just whispered in your husband's ear, in your wife's ear? Maybe not. In some cases, probably not. But it will get better. And as I always remind my kids, during this season, particularly with Bridget and I, our family, some of our family, the interaction with us will be the only Christ, the only Jesus that some of my family, some of Bridget's family sees all year long during this Christmas season. And there is an opportunity for that light to shine, and that's what we're going to talk about next week. So let me pray for us. Father, would you give us the wisdom to maneuver well through the minefields before us? Father, there are people in this room that, as much as I joke around and make light of it, this is a really tense topic. There are situations that I can't even fathom with difficult family and extended family, and it's been painful for a long time. And Father, I just pray that you would give each of us wisdom to look at it, to be honest about it, to call a spade, to communicate through it. And Lord, that we would work for your glory during this season. Father, help some of these difficult relationships, Lord. They might not be great any day or any day soon, but Lord, you can redeem all things. So we put them before your throne of grace, and we ask that you would help us during this season to maneuver and maneuver well. Pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. So a couple questions to chat about. The softball. How does the account of Jacob make you feel about your family? I mean, hopefully nobody's married to their cousin and sleeping with servants. Hopefully out there. Number two, how do you tend to respond when you are forced to be around challenging people? What's your default? Do you hide? Do you avoid? Do you manipulate? What's your default position? And then finally, what advice would you give another family? Because it's probably not happening in your family. So what advice would you give another family with difficult family relations during the holidays? Go ahead.